Welcome to Spirits on Spirits, a podcast where we mix ghost stories with a little liquid courage. I'm Aiden.
And I'm Nate.
And together we'll dive into the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright terrifying, all while enjoying a drink or two. Each episode we'll explore haunted places, ghostly encounters, and paranormal mysteries, pairing them with the perfect cocktail to keep our nerves steady. So grab a glass, turn down the lights, and join us as we sip, shiver, and swap some spine-chilling stories. Because here at Spirits on Spirits, the only thing stronger than the ghosts are our drinks.
What up, bone bros and tarot hoes? Welcome back to another episode of Spirits on Spirits. We are so excited that you're joining us for another weekly weekly endeavor into the supernatural, the booze-filled banter that goes on here at Spirits on Spirits. Aiden, how are we doing this week?
Doing great, man. We're back to the booze and booze.
Yes, back to the booze and booze. We are, you know, it's a normal recording time, a normal time of night. It's crazy. It's dark now. It is fully winter.
Fully dark.
It is fully dark. It's fully winter, which definitely adds to the spiriting or to the spooking nature of the podcast. So, yeah. How we doing?
Straight chilling, man.
Nice.
I feel like we're getting into the holiday season now.
I know.
We're kind of escaping the spooky season vibes.
Yes. Yep.
But we're still staying spooky season on this podcast all year round.
Yeah, we're podcasting about spooky stuff all year round. Just now we have seasonal depression while we're doing it. So, yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah. Well, where are we headed this week?
So we are headed to Salt Lake City, Utah.
Nice.
Utah is one of the states that I've never been to. So
I have not been to Utah either. I was supposed to go to Utah, and then I got hurt, so I wasn't able to go. I was supposed to go on a camping trip in the Canyonlands National Park in Utah.
Ooh, nice.
And I hurt my knee, so I was not able to go on that trip.
I would love to go to Utah.
I was very bummed about that.
It looks so nice.
Yeah, it does. It does look so nice. So, where in Utah are we headed?
Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City. We're licking salt in the city, bro.
Licking salt. So, bit of trouble this week with finding a cocktail, because as you may or may not know, Utah is primarily Mormon.
Yes, Salt Lake City specifically.
Salt Lake City especially is, yeah, primarily Mormon. And Mormons do not drink alcohol.
No.
So.
Or coffee.
Or coffee.
Either. Yeah.
But what they do drink a lot of.
Yes.
Is soda pop.
Yes, a lot of soda pop.
So I have.
Which, why? It has caffeine still, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So why is that? How is there a workaround there?
I don't know that it's caffeine. I think it's just, right?
Coffee.
Like, is it caffeine that they
caffeine? I would have thought that it was caffeine because it was a drug, but I could be totally wrong.
So
I know nothing about the Mormon
religion. So I'm going to go on a little side tangent here for a minute.
Except for soaking.
Soaking. So I am a fan of reality TV.
Yes.
I am also a fan of Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. And one thing that I was like, what the fuck, too, is apparently they are like, alcohol? Ew. No, we can't do that. Weed? Ugh. No way. But what they do love is ketamine.
Oh, Jesus.
They go...
Wait, on the show they love ketamine?
Oh, dude, yeah. They
really?
They go to... Well, so one thing that they do is they go to, like, plastic surgeons to get Botox.
Yeah.
And when they get Botox, they're like, hey, can we get laughing gas?
Yeah.
And so they get laughing gas. And then another thing that they do is they go on, like, these ketamine, like, retreats.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know how in their world that's okay.
I don't know.
But all those other things aren't.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know what? To each their own.
It's weird. They also all look the same, too.
They're all, like, yeah, blonde.
Same hair.
A lot of plastic surgery.
They're also all pretty attractive, too. Like,
I don't know what that is.
What? That they're just all hot?
I don't know.
Why? How is a whole city and population and religion just hot?
I don't know what it, like...
I don't either.
Is it, like, a... Must be a Mormon, like, are just Mormons, like...
Just good genes?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
No idea.
No idea, but they are very pretty.
But so, for this episode, what I did is, instead of doing, like, a signature cocktail or anything like that for the city, because obviously, I don't know that there really is one.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do... what they're famous for, which is Dr. Pepper.
Got you.
They love Dr. Pepper.
Do they really?
They love Diet Coke and Dr. Pepper.
Got you.
So I did Dr. Pepper and rum.
Nice. Spike DP.
Just a spike DP. Dr. P.
Dr. P.
So let's see how it came out.
Yeah.
Cheerio.
Cheers. What do we got?
Classic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, DP. That was not. Have you ever spiked a DP before?
I'm sure I have in college.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I don't know.
I was a big rum and coke guy in college.
That's fair.
So I'm sure at some point I got sick of the rum and cokes, and I was like, I'm gonna go for something with a little more flavor.
See, I never drank like dark soda. Like as a man, I don't know. It just always like threw me out. I was like, eh. As an adult, yeah, but like as in a college student, it was just Sprite or I think all I did was Sprite. I think I did vodka Sprite.
Never did tonic?
No, not at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. I was like, ah. Like, because you want the flavor that much.
I got to say, the hangovers after soda.
Oh, yes.
Really bad.
Yep.
Really rough.
Like a heavy vodka Sprite night, dude. God. You were just...
Rum and Coke, just...
Down for the fucking
just
thumbs.
Head throbbing.
Yes.
And in the morning.
So bad.
Definitely don't recommend overindulging in this beverage.
No.
But...
Yeah.
Hey. I'm good for one or two
yeah.
if you are.
Yeah.
So. not Nate, because he's sober, but
yeah.
the fans. let's get into my location. For the day. So my location is Salt Lake City City Hall. I also saw it in some places as just Salt Lake City Hall, which makes sense and doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it...
Because Salt Lake City is the city name, and then City Hall is the building name, so it should be Salt Lake City City Hall.
Yes.
So that's what I want. If you ever find yourself standing on the lawn of Washington Square at twilight, just as the Wasatch Mountains start slipping into silhouette, you will notice that there's a moment where the lights inside the Salt Lake City and County Building feel strangely warm, almost golden, against the darkening sky. It's an inviting building by day, a sandstone castle with carved faces and a clock tower that reaches over 250 feet in the air, but at dusk it changes. The details sharpen, shadows deepen, and the gargoyles perched high along the gables seem to lean in ever so slightly, watching and waiting. But long before the building existed, the ground itself carried its own energy. The year is 1847. Waves of wagons are rolling into the valley. The exhausted Mormon pioneers following Brigham Young's declaration that this is the place. Washington Square, though it wasn't called that yet, was just a dusty open plot of land where families camped between their thousand-mile journey and whatever future they hoped to build.
Creepers. That's a long-ass journey.
It is a long-ass journey. I don't know. Have you seen 1883?
No.
It's the Yellowstone prequel?
Yeah, I have to see Yellowstone.
Wicked good.
Yeah.
Honestly, I kind of fell off of Yellowstone.
Okay.
But 1883 is, like, captivating the entire way.
It was really good.
Really, really good.
All right. That was Harrison Ford was in that, right?
No, he's in 1923. There's like different generations of the Dutton family.
Interesting.
In different shows. So huh. There's 1883, which is Tim McGraw.
Tim McGraw?
And Faith Hill.
Whoa.
And then there's 1923, which is Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren.
Gotcha.
And then Yellowstone.
And you've seen them all?
I saw 1883 in its entirety, which is only one season.
Gotcha.
1923 is two seasons. I've only seen the first one.
Gotcha.
And then Yellowstone I've seen a few seasons of, but kind of fell off of it.
I saw the first episode of 1923.
It's good.
I was with my grandmother, and there was boobs, and I was like,
I actually don't remember the boobs.
There was boobs, and I was like, I don't want to watch any more boobs with my grandmother, so.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any boobs in 1883.
Well.
Or Yellowstone, for that matter.
Probably just will air it safe and not watch with my grandmother.
That's a safe bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just like, got
I mean, either way, there's a lot of violence.
Yeah, that's
it's a
fine.
Violent show.
I don't mind violence. Boobs with grandmothers are, that's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
Yep.
For years, people came through here like a tide. It was immigrant families heading west, pitching tents, children darting between wagons, and cooking fires were glowing at dusk. It was a space of noise and movement, a clearing that held every emotion a person could drag across the plains. Happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Sadness.
A lot of sadness on the plains.
Anger.
A lot of anger on the plains.
And death.
A lot of death on the plains.
A lot of death on the plains.
A lot of death.
By the 1880s, Salt Lake City was in a tug of war over identity. The church-backed People's Party and the mostly non-Mormon Liberal Party fought for control of the city's government. Out of that struggle came the idea of
who won that one.
Yeah, well, we have no idea.
No idea.
I actually, so another side tangent, another show. I think it's, I don't remember what it's called. It's got the guy who plays Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, I never saw Friday Night Lights.
Oh, I think it's his name's like Taylor Kitsch or something.
Gotcha.
It's a show about this.
About Mormon?
It's about Brigham Young and his, like, basically, like, his taking over of Utah.
Got you. Huh.
And, it's, dude, it's
very
crazy.
Interesting. Nice.
It's crazy. They were, like, a violent bunch.
Were they?
Well, they had to be, I guess.
But, sure.
Yeah, they were.
Take no prisoners.
Yeah. But yeah, where was I? Out of that struggle came the idea for a grand municipal building, one that would declare Salt Lake's commitment to civil authority, not religious rule. The idea was bold, but the execution would be even bolder. The new city hall would stand just blocks from the Salt Lake Temple, and it would be built to rival it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. You're like, we're going to build a government building.
We're going to build a house as big as your house.
Yes.
Right down the street so that you can see it.
Yeah. That's crazy. The Salt Lake City Temple.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It makes sense.
I mean, yeah, for sure. For what? Yeah.
Plans were drawn, debates raged, and money was allocated, then pulled back, then allocated again. Construction finally began in 1891 using Cuyun sandstone hauled in by train. More than 100 rooms, 5 floors, and a central clock tower were planned.
That's a big-ass building.
But as the sandstone walls rose, workers on site whispered that something was wrong.
Uh-oh.
Two children.
Ruh-roh, Shaggy.
Ruh-roh. Two children, according to long-kept lore, fell to their deaths during construction.
No.
Their stories never made the newspapers. Records at the time were selective, and the children's accidents rarely got more than a line.
That's a bummer.
But for generations, employees have claimed to hear small footsteps echoing through the corridors after dark. Some swear that they've seen child-sized shadows whisk across landings where no living children were present.
That's terrifying.
Whether or not the accidents really happened, the legend became part of the building before the roof was even on. If you walk around the building today, the first thing that you'll notice is how alive the stone feels. Imagine stonemasons in the 1890s carving explorers, priests, native leaders, and frontier figures into the facade. Their chisels scraped and chipped at every surface, transforming the sandstone into a parade of faces and symbols. It's beautiful, but it's also the kind of beauty that makes your skin prickle. Not because it's threatening, but because it feels aware of your presence.
Whoa. There's something strange.
Inside, the elegance continues. Long hallways lined with portraits, onyx details, old wooden staircases that creak in ways no amount of renovation can silence. It is unmistakably a building with a pulse. When the building opened in 1894, nearly triple its projected budget, so it was originally, the architects were like, oh, it'll be 300 grand.
Yeah.
Or 350 grand. It was bid at a little bit more than that, but the end result was over 900,000.
Whoa, back then, that's a...
It's a pretty penny.
Frick ton of money, dude.
But if you see the building, I mean, it's
yeah.
spectacular. So, it makes sense. But it became the beating heart of Utah politics. The following year, in a third-floor courtroom, delegates gathered to draft the Utah State Constitution. Those voices, some say, never entirely left. Night shift workers who walk the third floor have reported hearing murmured conversations behind closed, empty rooms. Others have heard the scrape of chairs moving on hardwood floors long after the building is locked for the night. If you ask them whether they think it's the ghosts of the delegates, they usually shrug in a way that says they're not committing to either explanation, but they're also not eager to be up there alone. In 1934, an earthquake shook the city, toppling statues and cracking stone. The damage was so severe that some of the original rooftop figures had to be removed entirely. For decades afterward, the building looked slightly wounded as though pieces of its identity had been chipped away. In the 1980s, engineers undertook one of the most ambitious preservation projects in Utah history. They lifted the entire structure, an enormous weight of sandstone and steel, and slid it onto 400 massive base isolators. So they lifted the entire building.
Wait, what? They lifted the entire fucking building?
They lifted the building.
How did they...
Dude, no idea. No idea how they did it. But old buildings don't always adjust quietly. After the restoration, employees began reporting new cold spots, new drafts, and new sounds in old hallways. Renovations are famous for stirring up dormant spirits, and Salt Lake City's City Hall seemed to be no exception. When another earthquake hit in 2020, the building swayed gently on its isolators, almost like a ship riding out a wave, but it survived. But workers who were inside at the time said that they felt as though someone or something moved with them. Ask longtime employees whether they believe the building is haunted, and they tend to answer with the same cautious tone. Well, I've seen some things.
Seen some things.
One worker worked in the building for more than 20 years. Her first brush with the unexplainable was a simple one. She was standing with coworkers one morning when she felt a firm grip on her arm. Fingers pressed just hard enough to make her spin in surprise, but no one was there. She brushed it off until something stranger happened. One night, she was walking the third floor, heading toward an office where she knew a coworker had been finishing up paperwork. She heard typing, loud, distinct, and rhythmic. Relieved that she wasn't alone, she approached the office. She kept on hearing the typing. She opened the door, and it stopped, and the room was empty.
Whoa.
She backed out slowly and decided maybe she didn't need to finish her rounds that night after
yep,
all.
Yep, nope, you go home. You're like, nope, not dealing with this shit.
The most famous ghost stories from the building are children. Many workers who have been in the building after hours report hearing children laughing in hallways where no one should be, especially not late at night.
And especially, it's like, bro, it's nighttime at City Hall. There's no fun. There's
yeah,
no
what
one
are you doing
like,
here?
What are you laughing about?
People are like reading like 100-page documents.
Yes.
Like, why are
you
Why are you giggling?
Yes.
Others hear the unmistakable sound of footsteps running down the third floor corridor, so light and fleeting that they never seem to touch the ground long enough to make sense. One night, the woman who I had just talked about, the one who heard the typing, she and her family members were on that floor, unlocking a room with only the spill of light from the doorway breaking the darkness. As she slid the key into the lock, all of them heard a giggle of a child, then another, then tiny footsteps racing away down the hall.
Oh, fuck that, dude.
Every hair on her arm stood up.
Yeah, I believe it.
The hallway was completely dark. There were no children in the building, and yet the laughter sounded so close. Close enough that she could almost feel someone darting past her.
Jeepers, creepers.
And these stories aren't, like, one-offs.
They're no, like, it sounds like a shit ton of that.
They've continued for decades. There's one other employee, there's another story that employees tell about the fifth floor. A nighttime worker who I couldn't find his name, says that he's been jolted by strange occurrences up there more than once. Enough, in fact, that he developed a bizarre coping tactic for himself. He sings. Not for himself, but for the ghost. He says singing seems to calm whatever's up there.
Singing loud for all to hear is the best way to spread Christmas cheer.
There you go. He's never seen anything, but he's felt things. Like someone standing just behind him in a doorway, or brushing past him on the stairs.
That's weird.
Sometimes the air feels thick, like the hallway is holding its breath. Sometimes it feels like he's not supposed to be there at all. But when he sings, he feels the pressure lift. He told a reporter that, I don't know if they like it or if it just distracts them, but it works. The darkest stories come from below the building. There's a tunnel.
Oh, no.
I feel like, there's tunnels everywhere.
There is, I guess.
I didn't realize how popular tunnels
are. No, I was going to say, that is like the number one eye-opening thing this podcast has brought to my attention, is just tunnels.
There's stuff underneath us all the time,
all the time. So many tunnels. Just fucking everywhere, dude.
It's a long, dim, echoing passageway that once connected City Hall to the old jail and courthouse.
Oh.
Prisoners walked through that tunnel in shackles, including some notorious criminals. It's sealed to the public now, but ghost hunters have been granted access on rare occasions. During one investigation, the team used a device called an ovulus, which spits out words supposedly influenced by environmental energy. When they tried it on the second floor, the first words it produced were down, deep, and under.
Hey, down, yo. Under. Yeah. Pause.
They laughed nervously. They were headed to the tunnel next. Down there, where the air is cold and heavy, they heard something else. This time through a spirit box. The device crackled and sputtered, then formed a word out of the static. Bad. A minute later, once again, bad. Then, evil.
Oh.
Most investigators try to stay skeptical. They'll tell you that the radio interference can play tricks. But even so, hearing those words in a corridor that once held some of the city's worst criminals, it's creepy. And also, the fact that they heard down, deep, and under.
Yeah.
Meaning the tunnels, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Right?
They were trying to lure them down there.
And then they were like, bad, evil.
In a land down under. I actually don't know how that song goes.
Neither do I.
But it goes down to the tunnel where there's bad and evil people. So
down under.
Down under.
Crikey.
Crikey, there's some evil people. yeah, for sure. That's crazy. And I would definitely be curious to know more about the evil people under the city hall. But yeah, what do you think, haunted or nah?
I'll go haunted overall, but I do think that some of this stuff is explainable, like the, oh, we feel more drafts after the thing was lifted, like, yeah, there's gonna be cracks and shit probably.
Sure.
Just stuff like that. But yeah, I think overall I'll go hall.
Yeah, I'm thinking haunted too. I think what, you know, obviously I'm a victim to your writing, but the building felt very alive. Like the building itself felt like it had an energy just based on that reading and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I totally, I'm going haunted too. So yeah. And little kids, bro. Anytime there's little kids, and it sounds like very distinct sounds, like the sound of typing is very distinct.
Yeah.
And if there's no one there, it's like, what, where did
and
that
I also
from?
Feel like if you're going to make a story up, like typing is just not very scary.
No.
To make up.
No one made that up.
So, yeah, I'll go haul.
Yeah, me too. So, all right, word.
You got a poem for us?
I do have a poem.
I'm excited.
I have a topical poem. So.
Ooh, okay.
It's a little bit longer, actually. Oh, shit. It's actually kind of long. Okay. I'm just going to read it. Okay. I'm standing there, minding. It's called Peppermint Chaos and Premarital Panic.
Okay.
I'm standing there, minding my peppermint mocha business, when Buddy the Elf pops out of nowhere like a Christmas-themed jump scare. He's buzzing like he just freebased maple syrup behind a 7-Eleven. Eyes wide, knees high, vibrating like a Dollar Tree massage chair. He shouts, "Let's spread Christmas cheer!" And I'm like, "Buddy, my dude, this is a Walgreens parking lot, and I'm not emotionally prepared." Before I escape, he grabs my arm, dragging me across the street like a golden retriever that learned English by accident. Then, Elder Jensen appears, glowing like he was carved from ivory soap, name tag shining, tie straighter than his search history. Buddy beams, "Hi, want to go too fast?" And Elder Jensen does that slow Mormon blink. You know, the one, equal parts confusion, prayer, and silent begging for a transfer. We were suddenly the weirdest trio since Jesus, Santa, and that one cousin who drinks eggnog like it owes him money. Buddy sprints down the sidewalk shouting, "Smiling is my favorite," while Elder Jensen is trying to keep up, like, "Okay, but do we need to repent after this?" Buddy tries to hug a parked car. Elder Jensen says, "That's not a living thing, brother Buddy." Buddy licks it anyways. Elder Jensen hands out pamphlets. Buddy hands out candy canes. I hand out apologies. At one point, Buddy yells, "Santa's coming!" And Elder Jensen gets beat red, like, the phrasing feels inappropriate. Buddy finds mistletoe, holds it above all of us like a trap. Elder Jensen screams and dives behind a decorative planter like the world's sweetest action hero dodging premarital cooties. Buddy eats gum off a railing for protein. Elder Jensen tries to give the gum a blessing. Buddy wants to streak through Temple Square yelling, "Holiday traditions are important." And Elder Jensen is sprinting after him like, "Buddy, no, that's a month-long disciplinary council." Meanwhile, I'm just in the back like, I did not wake up today thinking I'd become the designated adult in a trio featuring a sugar-high elf with an attention span of a dying Roomba and a Mormon elder having his first existential crisis. But somewhere between Buddy chugging syrup from a thermos and Elder Jensen politely declining every bad decision in a 12-block radius, I realized this right here is the true spirit of Christmas. One chaotic cinnamon roll, one terrified missionary, and me just trying to not go to jail before the hot cocoa stand closes. Thank you.
I didn't get the premarital panic in there.
No, me. Well, I think because Buddy tried to kiss him, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, maybe. And I'm guessing being gay and Mormon.
Yeah, I think that's probably extra bad.
Oh, that's another thing.
What?
About Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Yeah.
All of their husbands, just very gay.
Wait, what?
Yeah, just like very, like objectively just very gay.
Like they're making out with each other?
No. But like, it's a popular thing online that they're not straight.
Wait, why?
You would know what I mean if you watch the show.
Okay.
It's just everything.
But like,
just,
what?
They're
like,
just gay.
They're just gay.
You just get the
vibe. Just gay.
That they're just gay.
Like, are they banging their wives or stuff like that?
I mean, yeah, they have kids and stuff.
That's fair.
But
I heard someone talking about that, and it was funny. Where it was like, someone was like, "Oh, do you ever bang?" And he goes, "Well, I have a kid," and he goes, "No, that's proof that your wife banged, not you." Oh man. Yeah, that's interesting. We tried that show. We watched like an episode.
Yeah.
I was actually down to watch more. My girlfriend does not like reality TV show.
It's a damn shame.
I was like, come on, you just want to watch it, like, let loose a little, like, just, like, watch people be chaotic as shit.
It's a great show.
I'll try to convince her to watch it again. That one will probably be a hard-fought battle.
You successfully got her into Love Island.
Love Island, yes. Yeah. But, I don't know. And I can't watch that by myself. Watching The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives by yourself is, can't be doing that.
That's fair.
Can't be doing that. You might be described as one of the husbands. so, can't be doing that.
That is fair.
Oh, man. So, all right, well, you want me to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. So, my story is the Devro Mansion, right? Devereaux.
Yeah, there's a beach in Marblehead.
Yeah.
Called Devro.
Right,
Beach.
That's how it's spelled,
that's
right?
That's how it's spelled, yeah.
So, Devro. The Devro Mansion. So, it's located at 340 West South Temple, Salt Lake City. And it was built in 1857, okay? The architectural style is Victorian/Gothic revival. And the original owner... Oh, jeez, I cannot
The
speak.
Original owner.
William Staines. And then the most famous owner was William Jennings, Utah's first millionaire.
Oh, that's cool.
So let's go back a little bit to the early years. So in 1857 to around 1865, it was the first mansion of the valley. So the Devro Mansion holds the title of the first truly elegant high society home built in the Salt Lake Valley. Constructed for William Staines, an English convert who became a prominent citizen in early Utah. And at this time, Salt Lake was mostly the frontier still. So it was cabins, small houses, dirt streets. The mansion stood out as a symbol of ambition and refinement. It had a large room. It was ornate. And it made, you know, its decadent nature made it the center of political gatherings, visits from church leaders, and diplomats traveling to the Utah territory. So people often referred to it in those early years as the showpiece of Salt Lake.
Mm.
So, yeah, kind of crazy. So now we're on to the Jennings era. So from 1865 to 1890, we're talking wealth, we're talking power, we're talking party. So in 1865, the mansion was purchased and expanded by William Jennings, a wealthy merchant cattle dealer and railroad investor who later became mayor of Salt Lake City. Jennings transformed the house drastically. So he made a large Italian wing. There's a fancier word, Italianate wing, which my guess is an Italian reference, like, or architecturally based wing. But I like to call it the Italian wing because it just makes it sound like he's got a wing full of, like, pasta and meatballs.
Italian.
And guys sitting in, like, plastic chairs smoking cigarettes.
And then you've just got Mario jumping in the corner.
Exactly. That is what the wing of this house is. He built ornate parlors for music, dancing, and formal dinners. And he filled the home with expensive furnishings from none other than Europe. And then he landscaped the grounds with orchards, gardens, and, get this, fountains. So, yeah, this house was legit. It was hosted, it played host to U.S. dignitaries, railroad barons, wealthy families from eastern states, and foreign royalty and ambassadors. So, pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. A lot of pretty important people were standing in the house there. Then Jennings died.
As one does.
As one does. So from the 1900s to the 1970s, it was a boarding house. It was offices, apartments, and then it was also vacant for different periods. In 1979, a fire broke out and severely damaged large portions of the building. Many believed the mansion was destined for demolition, but the preservationists rallied to save it. So, okay. That's all that good stuff. Now, let's get into the ghosts. The ghosts that occupy the Devereux. There are two primary spirits reported to inhabit this residence for long periods of time.
Can I make a guess?
Yes.
Billy Staines.
No.
The other Billy.
No.
Billy, whatever.
Billy Jennings. So, let me rephrase that. My first answer was a harsh no. My second was like a soft no.
Because okay.
There's one spirit, we don't know who it is, but it is a male spirit, so we
My
might.
My prediction, Billy Staines.
Maybe, yes. But those aren't the two main spirits. We got two main spirits. The most commonly witnessed one is a little girl spirit. She is thought to be a young daughter of one of the early occupants or a servant's child who died. Now, there was not good records back then at all. So we actually have no idea who she was. But she is seen very often. And it is believed that she, or actually a third theory is a neighborhood child who visited often met a tragic end on the property. So there is two versions. One, illness. So like boring. Or two, accident. No, I'm kidding. Kids dying is always not cool. So
pretty uncool. Yeah.
Pretty uncool. But there was an accident. Some say she fell down the staircase. The others say that she fell out a window. And then the third was, I think like ran into a tree in the lawn and like,
that's a tough one.
That's a tough way to go. There's no documents, so we don't know. But the sightings are all frequent enough and consistent that we know it's like, it is the one single person and stuff like that.
Yeah.
She's described as in between 8 and 10 years old and wears a Victorian light blue dress with long, dark brown hair. So she's often seen in upstairs windows, on the main staircase, or in the nursery room. And that's where I go. I think she probably lived there because, spent a lot of time. Like, you wouldn't go to the nursery room. Like, my guess is that she's going to where she stayed as a kid, right? When she goes to the nursery?
Yeah.
And then my guess, the standing by the window upstairs or on the main staircase, probably because she fell off of one of them. My guess is, my theory is, occupant's daughter fell down the staircase, looks out the window to, like, look and see if people are going to come, like, hang out with her.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
I can stand by that.
Yeah. So, the paranormal shit she does is she giggles when no one's around. People will just be walking. They'll hear, like,
I bet it's just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah.
And that scares the fuck out of people. Small footsteps running across the floor. So again, she's like, I feel like kids don't run in places unless they like feel like they own it. And for kids, that bar is low. Like, kids feel like they own fucking everything. No reason whatsoever.
That's true.
Absolute booger eaters. but they... I feel like if she was like a servant kid, maybe she wouldn't be doing that. I think maybe neighbor that would come over often could definitely do that.
Yeah.
Or occupant's daughter.
Yeah, servant's daughter would probably be like, hey, just don't make waves here.
Yes. Or it'd be like Princess and the Frog, like, you ever seen that movie?
No.
Like, Tiana, the princess in that, she was like really good friends with the like sugar cane's baron son, or daughter. So, like, she was a servant's daughter, but she would, like, play with.
Yeah.
But I feel like someone would be like, hey, don't run in the hallways. Like, I don't care if you're with the kid of
Go outside.
Go outside. So, they often...
So, maybe she ran into a tree.
Maybe. Light humming. So, she hums often. How do kids hum? What does a kid hum?
Hot cross buns? I don't know.
Caillou theme song. What is Hot Cross Buns?
I remember playing that on the recorder.
In third grade.
It's a miracle elementary school music teachers aren't just absolute, like, murderers.
Why was that a thing that every kid has to learn the recorder?
In the world. Like, no. Everyone in the country of the United States has to, like, learn the recorder.
Guess how many professional recorder players I've ever seen in my entire life? Zero.
Zero.
But I don't know of a single one.
We all had to learn it. Did you get the little belts, like, every time you, the strings?
I'm
like
a white belt.
Yeah, like,
I Hot Cross Buns.
Yeah, like, I can play Hot Cross Buns and, like, Nutty Nuts a lot or something like that. So I have two strings on.
Yeah.
Did
you ever, did you do chorus at all in elementary school? Like, did you have to learn, like singing and stuff?
Yes.
Did you learn Puff the Magic Dragon?
No.
Oh, that's a good song.
We did Muppets. We did, like, I remember one of our concerts was Muppets. But I just, going back to the recorder thing, like, that unit, they must fucking dread.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, 24.
Just the highest
pitch.
Yeah,
24 kids just sitting on a carpet. Go, all right, Hot Cross Buns. And it's just, and it's like, very good class.
Yeah, nice job, guys.
Like, I have a bottle of scotch in my desk. I can't feel a thing. Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, I remember we did chorus. We did the Muppets, like Menomina, boop boo da doo doo, and then we did the 50. We did a 50 states play, where like we like all were different states. And I remember having to swing Sweet Home Alabama on stage
because you were Alabama.
I was Alabama. Sweet Home Alabama.
I didn't do anything like that. I remember there was one that we did. I was so pissed because I was sick the day of the actual performance. But it was a precipitation play.
What?
Yeah.
So you were just
parts
of the water cycle?
People were like clouds and
gotcha.
Rain and snow.
Oh, man.
And the sun. Yeah, but I was sick on the day. I was like, I don't want to miss this.
Yeah, and then you missed it.
But my mom was like, you're like actually sick.
Yeah, you're like actively throwing up. You can't go. All right. The other thing she does is she loves to put her tiny handprints on dusty surfaces.
Cleaning up, I like it.
Yep. Or just like a tiny. Dude, the handprints freak me the fuck out. Dude, I found handprints in my apartment.
Ooh.
So they're definitely just like someone touched the paint when it was wet, like to like feel it. Cause there's two parts on the hallway that I had never noticed before. And just like the other day noticed it, but it's like glossy. It's like different. It's a different gloss than like the other paint on the wall.
So it's something that's been there for a while. It's not like a fresh handprint.
No. I think like someone like when they painted it, like put a hand on it to see if it was dry. It wasn't fully dry, and it like affected the way the paint dried.
Gotcha.
I'm hoping at least.
No, I think it's fresh.
Nope.
I think someone just put it there.
Oh man. And the other thing that people also report is that she moves small objects like toys, pens, and fabrics. So she just picks them up and moves them. And witnesses have described her as curious, mischievous, but ultimately harmless. Like, she's not a malevolent spirit at all. She does also sometimes show up in photographs.
Ooh, yeah, that's fun.
A little photograph action. So the other spirit, so she's the first spirit. The second spirit is a woman, and she is sometimes aggressive. She is described as protective, so let me get into her. So we are, first off, starting at the identify stop on the train. Choo-choo. She could potentially be a former housekeeper who ruled the mansion staff, so she was like kind of like the, like, nope. But people, many suspect a strict lady of the house. So a lot of people think it's Miss Mary, Mrs. Jane Jennings. JJ, Mrs. JJ.
So that's WJ's wife.
Yes, WJ's wife. And yeah, so she is and so I don't know. Look, so hear the description, then tell me who you think, because it also could be a governess or a matron who oversaw the children, so like the nanny or something like that, or a protective spirit attached to the mansion itself. So those are the different, like, who it could be. Her energy is described as firm and territorial. So she is often described as a tall woman in black or dark blue Victorian clothing. Her hair's pinned up, and she's seen standing at the top of the staircase, and she glimpses in mirrors or passing doorways. So, like, moving often. So who do you think it is? Because I actually go back and forth. I don't know.
That could either be the lady of the house, or it could be like the I could see like a head servant.
Yeah. I thought
Head
potentially
servant, if she's,
nanny.
because she's like looking in the, yeah, she's looking in like the mirrors and the doorways and stuff. But at the same time, if she's like stern and stuff, she might be the lady of the house and like
Yeah.
controlling everything, making sure that everything is good.
It's fair. So she often slams doors closed, like slams them, like llama jamma, slam a
Yeah, I'm
rama.
gonna go with Lady of the House.
Objects thrown. She throws books or like decorative items, switches on lights, and like in locked rooms specifically. So like rooms have been locked, and like you can see under the door the light go on and off and stuff like that. Sudden cold blasts, often accompanied by a sense of being watched. So she just kind of like, and like people are like, oh shit, someone's here. And then people often get pushed or nudged on staircases. And just, you know, ultimately gives a strong get out vibe for certain visitors.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely interesting. And you know what's also very interesting is she is especially active during renovations, loud events, or when people speak negatively about the home.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely lady of the
You
house.
think JJ?
Well, if she's like, if she's pissed about people talking smack about the house, then it's like, oh, these decorations aren't nice, or like, you know, this thing about the house isn't nice, and maybe it's like the lady of the house is like, I picked this.
Yeah, I could see that, but I also go back and forth of like, you get one of those like head servants who like takes respect like it like
Takes it seriously.
so seriously. I could also see it being her too.
Pride in her work.
Yeah, like pride,
Yeah.
like this is my fucking job. Like I this shit
But I
needs
feel like head servants don't slam doors.
No, that is fair.
Like, you're not interrupting stuff.
No, yeah.
Whereas Lady of the House, it's
She
your
has, yeah,
house.
it's your fucking house. So, yeah, it's interesting. So, but her energy is often described as like firm, territorial, but like protector of the house. Like she has no interest, or she is solely interested in the house surviving and being, you know, as clean and prim and proper as like it should be.
Yeah, my prediction is JJ.
JJ. I could get behind that. So, all right. Other things are shadow figures, seen in the servants' quarters, the basement behind curtains, which was terrifying, and then at the edge of hallways. So crazy.
Behind curtains isn't great.
Yep.
It's a little tough.
And then, so again, male spirit in the parlor is another spirit that is seen often during the evening hours. Seen sitting in a chair, vanishes when approached. And people think possibly a former guest or member of the Jennings family. I could see that being William Jennings. But I would think, I mean, maybe he just sits there and he goes, "Yeah, my wife's got this. She's gonna make sure the house is in tip top shape." So,
For sure.
yeah. So that is the Jennings house. What do you think?
I'll go, huh?
You'll go, huh? How
Yeah.
come?
Because I think that having the well, first of all, kids. There's a kid there. Creepy.
Yep.
I feel like having like a not malevolent, but like protective lady spirit That's convincing to me, like having slammed doors, lady looking in mirrors, looking in doorways, making sure everything's in order.
Yeah.
Especially from like that time period, I buy into that.
Yep, I agree.
That behavior. So.
Well, especially I feel like the people out west felt very like, it was almost like early 1700s New England, where they had this almost chip on their shoulder of like, no, I have the same amount of money as you. Like, I am equal to you. Like, they have that, like, wanting to prove themselves among the elite. Because that was the thing in the early, like, 1700s, late 1600s in New England. They were like, oh, Britain, people in England think they're better than us. But we have the same amount of money. There's no, like, so, like, that, like, extra chip on the shoulder of like, no, everything here needs to be perfect. So when one of them schmucks comes over, they go, wait, this is cleaner than my house. This is more ornate than my house. Like, how do I not have, like, and it's just a game of trying to make someone feel bad because you're self-conscious and stuff like that. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going haunted, too. I definitely think there's some shit going on here. Again, like you said, kid always bumps it up, like, 10 points. Like, 10 points for kid. And then her just being so kind of intense energy-wise definitely does it for me, too. So, yep.
All right, haunted. Well, Salt Lake City in the books.
Salt Lake City in the books. I would definitely go visit these landmarks.
I would love to go to Utah.
Be cool.
Yeah.
Be really, really freaking cool.
Well, if you guys have any feedback, definitely send it to us in any way that you can. DM us. Comment, etc. Follow us on all of our socials. Just let us know what you think.
Yeah. And we're, to any new listeners, welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard.
We're super excited that you're here. We come out with a new episode every week, getting into the spirits, getting into the other spirits, just trying to keep it lighthearted while telling some ghost stories.
Yeah, so. New epis on Mondays. So.
Yeah, epis on Mondays, so. We will see you then. Good night, everyone.
Stay spooky.
Stay spooky. Peace.